The following show is a replay of KTQA Daily Briefing. For more information, please call 253-330-8821 or visit us online at daily.ktqa.org.
Hello, and welcome to KTQA Daily Briefing. It is 6:03 p.m. on Monday, June 15th. It's been a little while since we have spoken with you and brought us your daily briefings, which, now that we are in Pierce County and in Phase 2, is a little inaptly named. And we will be bringing you daily briefings Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. live, instead of what you might have come to know and be familiar with 3 p.m. But we still have lots of things to tell you, and today is no joke on that measure. But I will start by saying that state-level updates on COVID-19 can be found, as usual, online in multiple languages at coronavirus.wa.gov. Dialing 311 gets you to the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line. Health department officials are staffing a coronavirus Q&A line 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week at 1-800-525-0127. For interpreters in other languages, you can press pound when they answer and say your language. You can text the coronavirus hotline by texting 211-211 in any language. Dialing 211 will connect you to community resources statewide through the United Way, and you can visit wa211.org online. State-level news, well, we got a lot of it. The Washington Emergency Management Division got reports this afternoon that some T-Mobile cell phone users were unable to complete 911 test calls, or that calls were taking 30 or more seconds to start ringing. The state E911 coordination office was working this afternoon with T-Mobile and local counties on this issue. This is in addition to the data and voice outages that are being reported all across the country for T-Mobile subscribers. So hang in there. The State Department of Health released a report on Friday indicating that COVID-19 activity continues to rise in our state. The report suggests an increase in transmission over Memorial Day weekend, but does not include increases that may have occurred following recent protests. Benton, Franklin, Spokane, and Yakima counties are of particular concern. Those eastern Washington counties show greatest increases in transmission levels that the department states will likely lead to explosive growth in cases and deaths, if not contained, with local prevalence estimated to exceed the King County's late March peak. Some scary stuff. Western Washington, though, also has transmission that has continued to increase, but at a slightly slower rate. More than 115,000 people in the U.S. have died of COVID-19, including 1,204 Washingtonians. That's 1,204 Washingtonians. The health department asks that, regardless of which phase your county is in, continue to practice physical distancing and wear masks in public and around high-risk people. If you are exposed to COVID-19 or develop symptoms, you should stay home and not visit with others until 10 days after you started feeling sick, or 3 days after your fever resolved without medication, or the day that your other symptoms resolved, whichever date is latest. That's from the Washington State Health Department. The governor has issued guidance for card rooms and similar businesses operating in Phase 2 counties. Full memos on this and all businesses can be found by following links at governor.wa.gov in the news section. The Washington State Auditor's Office will be reviewing the state's unemployment insurance system in response to the flood of fraudulent applications that overwhelmed the system during the height of the COVID-19 business closure. One audit will review what led to delayed and improper payments for unemployment benefits, and another review will investigate possible weaknesses in the department's computer systems. As of last Monday, more than 35,000 claims were still in adjudication. Those needing to file claims should go to esd.wa.gov. Friday, June 12th, that was last Friday, that was the deadline for every nursing home in Washington to offer COVID-19 tests to all residents, administer tests to all consenting residents, require all staff to be tested for COVID-19, and report positive test results to the state. The Secretary of Health provided an update that indicated that a shortage of shipping containers and cold packs had created complications for returning samples for lab processing, which meant that some facilities were not able to successfully meet the June 12th deadline. The health department notes that 187 facilities have either completed or received testing supplies or been shipped their testing supplies. And the department stated that 22 facilities that still had to confirm their testing supply needs and report their numbers as of last Friday will not be fined and are simply being asked to complete testing as soon as feasible while the department assists them in acquiring those supplies. Now on to Pierce County. Pierce Transit has reinstated fares at regular rates on buses and shuttles. That was as of yesterday, Sunday the 14th. Riders are asked to wear face coverings, follow signage indicating available seating, and be patient as passenger numbers continue to be limited. Passengers should enter through the front doors where transparent shields have been installed to separate drivers from passengers. Those with questions can call 253-581-8000 from 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on weekdays or visit piercetransit.org online anytime. Pierce County Libraries have opened book drops at 8 of the library system's 20 libraries. These are Fife, Gig Harbor, Lakewood, Parkland and Spanaway, South Hill, Summit, Sumner, and University Place. The library plans to open book drops at its other locations in the coming weeks. The library system will not be assessing fines for overdue books and materials for the remainder of 2020. That's due to the pandemic and disruption to regular services. Free Wi-Fi service is available for outside use of all Pierce County library buildings in parking lots with continued emphasis on social distancing. And online services continue to be offered at piercecountylibrary.org. Moving on to Tacoma. The Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium is opening. It's reopening June 18th for outdoor-only one-way visits, 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily. Every Tuesday from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., the zoo will open just for seniors over 65 and those at high risk from COVID-19. Tickets need to be purchased online for specific times and dates and are non-refundable. Masks are strongly encouraged but not required, and visitors are expected to practice social distancing from those outside one's household. Drinking fountains at the zoo are closed. No rental strollers, wheelchairs, or scooters are available at this time, but individuals may bring their own wheeled transportation. Guests must follow the marked one-way path through the zoo. Credit or debit cards are the only method of payment for in-zoo purchases. No cash will be accepted. And more details are available at pdza.org. The city of Tacoma has begun piloting a curbside cafe and market program where businesses can gain permits for temporary structures like outdoor tables, chairs, and shade coverings to allow food service and retail in ways that align with phases 2 and 3 of economic reopening. Retail businesses may also use right-of-way areas to serve customers. Fees for permit applications, street use, and on-street parking are currently being waived for businesses that are part of the pilot. More details and links to the application are found at cityoftacoma.org/curbsidecafe. More news from the city. The 2020 community cleanup program for single-family homes and duplexes is going curbside this year. Eligible residents can dispose of bagged and boxed unusable household items on their curb on their neighborhood's designated date at no charge. All batteries, gasoline, oils, and other fluids must be removed from whatever is being disposed, as these items are considered hazardous and no hazardous waste will be accepted. Construction materials, TVs, monitors, vehicles, and car parts and hot tubs are also unable to be accepted for curbside cleanup. And items that are in working condition should not be disposed of on community cleanup days, but donated. A list of organizations accepting donated items can be found at cityoftacoma.org/waste-free253. That's a cute little URL. More about the community cleanup days. Residents will receive a postcard in the mail about 1 week prior to their neighborhood's cleanup date. And the next three cleanup dates are as follows. Saturday, June 20th for the Tacoma Dome. Saturday, June 27th for Tacoma Community College. And Saturday, July 11th for the Evergreen State College. Those with questions can call 253-502-2100 or email solidwaste@cityoftacoma.org. Whew. And the hard thing about doing the daily briefing solo today is that when you got a lot of news, you got very little break. So let's see. We have got some school news, both here locally and across the state. Governor Inslee issued an amendment to his state of emergency proclamation recently, allowing for schools to reopen for the 2020-2021 school year in accordance with local health directives. The state superintendent of public instruction also released a 55-page document outlining guidance for how schools should operate starting in the fall. The expectation is that all schools will reopen this fall for in-person instruction with modifications in place to minimize risk of viral transmission. But the document outlines options for rotating schedules, phased reopenings, and continued remote learning for districts that are unable to meet social distancing requirements due to space constraints. Probably the biggest thing is that face coverings will be required for all staff, students, and guests, with exceptions for those with specific health and diagnosed behavioral concerns. Local school boards are responsible for adopting specific reopening plans. Little bit sooner than thinking about next fall, the Tacoma Public Schools curbside and bus delivery meal program will end this Friday, June 19th, which is the last day of the 2019-2020 school year in Tacoma. Tacoma Public Schools will be offering USDA summer food service beginning June 29th with curbside pickup at 10 a.m. to noon at 7 TPS middle schools. It will run through August 28th. The school district also notes that families whose children are eligible for free reduced school meals will also continue to benefit from pandemic EBT, also known as PEBT, for summer groceries. The public charge rule does not apply to pandemic EBT benefits and will not impact immigration status. Full details on all of those things that I just mentioned can be found online by following links at tacomaschools.org. or by calling the Tacoma Schools main line at 253-571-1000. June 16th and 18th are the last days for Tacoma students and families to pick up learning packets. That's this week, Tuesday and Thursday. The district encourages families to grab a packet for the next grade level up so that you can have it for the summer. All supplies are first come, first serve, and packets can also be downloaded from tacomaschools.org. And as you may have heard on the daily briefing, for those local to Hilltop, Peace Community Center is also available to help print those packets if you are unable to get to one of the schools to pick them up. Let's see. The Living Access Support Alliance is offering rental assistance to Tacoma renters identifying as Black, Brown, Indigenous, or mixed race, who have experienced job loss due to COVID-19. Applicants should email community engagement at lasawa.org or call 253-582-5320 between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. That was one of our Tacoma-based ones that I forgot. So now back to schools. In Federal Way, USDA Summer Meals Program will run June 29th through August 10th, with families able to pick up a week's worth of free meals, which includes 5 breakfasts and 5 lunches, every Monday at 13 sites across the district. The schedule with times and locations can be found online at fwps.org/summermeals. And those with questions may call the school district main line at 253-945-2000. Families living outside of Tacoma and Federal Way school service areas who need help with nutritional assistance can call the Help Me Grow Washington hotline. That's at 1-800-322-2588. You can also visit parenthelp123.org for additional summer meal locations in our area. And if you missed or need another look at any of those things that I just read out, any of those resources, any of those bulletins, any of those memos, you can go to daily.ktqa.org and you can click on any of our episodes for our daily briefing there. Click on the title and all of the show notes will pop up, all of those bulletins and resources, everything that we've been reading, along with links. They will pop up. So you can go to daily.ktqa.org. So if you didn't believe me that I had a lot to get across today, I hope you do now. But we do have an interview today as well. Before I go into the interview, just a reminder that you can dial 311 for the City of Tacoma non-emergency information line. You can dial 211 for statewide community resources. Our email address is daily@ktqa.org. And our phone number is 253-330-8821. You can call us or text us there. And I think now we'll be on to the interview. I'm very pleased this evening to be speaking with two individuals, Danielle Schell and Emily Azier. They are co-owners and operators of Fern and Foster, a place focused on supporting families and individuals throughout their fertility journey. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, let's start out by unpacking what it means when you say fertility journey. What might that mean?
This is Danielle. So fertility journey for us includes everything from preconception, so you just start thinking about maybe having children, to sometimes our queer families, that's a little bit more of a process. So we include all of those steps, whether it is just conceiving, you know, heterosexually or otherwise. It includes from preconception to postpartum and raising kids. So it's that full lifespan. We are eventually getting into support groups, including adoptive parents, things like that. But it would be like the full range of how babies are made and when you are in that cycle of doing that in your life.
So does that include things like IVF doctors? Do you have medical staff in Fern and Foster?
So yes and no. So we don't have IVF doctors here. We do have great support for people who are on that journey. But it would be more supporting them in terms of outside of that experience.
This is Emily answering too. we have one midwife. She's not on staff, but we have kind of a collaborative setup. Our building includes a few exam rooms, and we have other practitioners who use those exam rooms to run their practice. And we all sort of work collaboratively with the work that we do. So we are able to give pretty good referrals to people for trusted practitioners in the areas and then provide sort of that emotional support from that point on to actually conceiving and then having a baby.
In the fertility world in general, what are some of the services and supports that folks might seek out or might not even know that are things that can support them during this journey?
Sure. So this is Danielle again. So starting, you know, from preconception, we can help you understand what your cycle is doing, sort of family planning, that kind of education. We do have some classes that are forthcoming that we're sort of discussing about even period education through to sex education. And that would include sort of once you have conceived, pregnancy support groups, postpartum support groups, lactation services. So the full gamut, including loss and miscarriage support. I am a doula by training and by practice, and Emily is a midwife as well as a lactation consultant. So we do bring our services into the work that we do here, and they inform the way that we interact with our clients and our community here at Fern and Foster.
Now, I'm excited to be talking to you actually tonight because our interview has been a little bit delayed because, in fact, one time when we were going to be talking, one of you got called to a birth. Can you kind of describe what those kind of moments are like during this period of time when we're also focused on staying separated and isolated and things like that?
Yeah, this is Emily answering that. So Danielle and I both have spent large portions of our professional careers being on call. And it's not an easy lifestyle, that's for sure, when you are on call 24/7. And we both have kids, so you kind of always have to have a backup plan for where your kids are going to go. And I think our families and friends have a pretty good understanding that we can just, like, leave at any moment. Right now, with everybody in isolation, we work in really different, multiple settings, birth settings, but we do have to follow the masking protocols, and it's pretty impossible to do social distancing while you're helping somebody birth a baby. Mm-hmm. Very hands-on. So, yeah, it's challenging, and obviously there's some risks involved, but that's kind of how it is in the healthcare setting anyway.
Mm-hmm. And as a doula, you know, I work with people prenatally as well as postpartum. And so being on call for the birth includes often, you know, texting back and forth when you're in early labor, when you think you might be getting started, questions, answers, that sort of thing, phone calls. And then when you really feel like this is the real deal, I'm working through my contractions, I think I need some more support, a doula would join you. We do emotional, physical, but other types of support to help with the baby being born, including positional changes, things like that. So I would join a family at any point in their labor, usually sort of once early labor is starting to pick up into more active labor. And I do, you know, births at home. Emily and I have had the privilege of doing births together, which has been so fun. And so doulas are able to go and support their clients continuously, regardless of where they are birthing and however they plan to birth.
Now, what motivated the two of you to begin Fern and Foster?
This is Emily responding. So I think Danielle and I, like, first and foremost in our own experiences, becoming moms, becoming mothers, we both have two little boys, just kind of realized the importance of support and realized how one of the hardest things about becoming a new mom is isolation, and that it just doesn't really come naturally unless you happen to have a lot of friends that are having babies around the same time as you. We see a lot of modern parents these days end up alone in their houses for weeks and weeks and weeks after having their babies with very little support. So I think that was a big reason for just wanting to create a space where people can come together and there can be real services and real support groups led by kind of specialists in certain areas. So we really wanted to focus on our own specialty. So Danielle is a trained bereavement doula, so she runs a pregnancy loss group. And so I run the lactation support group. And we really want to expand to include more mental health support. And we do have a dad-specific group also, and then just kind of a general postpartum support group. It's called Life with Baby, and it's just kind of that whole focused on kind of the first year of having a baby. So we really love the support group aspect because it's not just us giving support, but it's actually parents meeting each other. And that is, like, long-term, that's much more sustainable type of support than they'll ever be able to get from an actual practitioner. So we really try to build community, giving people spaces to come together and just know that they're not alone and they're not unique in their struggles. And just that alone, I think, is really helpful to know that you're not the only person struggling through early parenthood.
I was just going to add, you know, we've only been open since September of last year, so not quite a full year. And, you know, we got into this for all of the reasons that Emily just stated. And I think I had been a birth worker for a number of years before opening Fern and Foster. And we both had seen how, you know, as a midwife, as a lactation consultant, as a doula, our services don't extend as far as families need. And so really trying to address that gap, that people really deserve support even outside of what their providers can address. And just anecdotally, you know, that Life with Baby group,
We didn't set out to only serve people in Hilltop, in the area that we're located, but just by chance, a number of the people that come to that group all live within a walking distance. So even during COVID, it's been lovely to meet via Zoom and check in with each other every week. And then they do like little stroller walk-bys and wave to each other outside of their windows. And so that's just been really fun and interesting to see how community can flourish when you just create the space and invite people into open, honest, authentic dialogue.
And this experience has given us the opportunity to offer virtual options, which we really didn't set out to do, but I've gotten a lot of feedback from other parents or from parents who've participated in the group saying, we love meeting in person, but if you could continue offering a virtual option, it just makes it so much more accessible to new parents because oftentimes your life revolves around your baby's sleeping schedule and your baby's eating schedule, and sometimes if it just doesn't line up, you can't make it out of the house. So the virtual options might be something that we continue offering even when we are able to meet in person again.
I want to ask a little bit about that virtual aspect of things, because some of my friends and colleagues who have become parents will kind of fall down these internet rabbit holes of parent discussion boards and find so much conflicting information. Do you, as Fern and Foster, have any strict stances on a particular thing? Because there's so many issues that can be so controversial, you know, whether to breastfeed or bottle feed or both, when to introduce food, whether you can have too much screen time. What are the kinds of things that you do to try and avoid some of that, I guess, information overwhelm and that conflicting information?
Sure. This is Danielle. You know, in the groups that I lead, I often will say something to the effect of, we really try to center mental health as far as the way that parenting strategy goes down. And so really valuing, like, a good parent is one who is okay. And if you're going to make rules for your child or your baby that end up putting a strain on you, make your life harder to follow the rules, then those aren't great strategies for your family. We often talk about how no two babies are alike, even if they're in the same family. So trying to just free people of the expectations, whether it is between children or between pregnancies or between, you know, friends and families' experiences, helping people tune in to their own needs and their own intuition is a big part of what I try to do. And so letting that lead, I think information overload, it's good to recognize that as a parent, you interact and sort of come into a place that maybe you haven't before having children in terms of your lack of control. And so sometimes when you're up at 3 a.m. Googling, you know, is this normal? Does my baby's poop look the right color? You're trying to find that control that you've lost. And so just recognizing that that's something that you need and leaving it at that. And then, you know, maybe using your other resources, whether it is, you know, reaching out to Fernan Foster or asking a friend from a group what their experience was, trying to avoid that rabbit hole of, you know, the internet. I think that has been a funny transition for us here in COVID, because we have been beating the drum for in-person support and, you know, really saying, like, peer-to-peer connection is gold. You know, it's really valuable to have a friend to text rather than Google. And that can give you a lot of reassurance or just like camaraderie and can silence some of the chaos of the internet. So we're finding ourselves conducting business online exclusively, especially during phase one and phase two. So it's just been kind of a funny thing to recalibrate and to see how can we use virtual tools to our benefit, to increase the connection between families, but then also remind them that the internet is not the only source of information, you know, and your own knowing is very valuable as a new parent. You know, if you read something and it doesn't resonate, then leave it alone.
The experience of fertility planning, of family planning, of pregnancy, of birthing, and of child rearing can, in many ways, be very culturally mediated. And I'm wondering how a place like Fern and Foster sort of wraps their arms around all of the different kinds of experiences and traditions that people may come from. Whether it's, okay, my family tradition says that for 8 days after birth, you don't go out of the house and you don't see anyone and everyone waits on you. Whereas my tradition says, no, you're up and doing things immediately. How do you sort of navigate that with such, you know, different kinds of clients that might come by?
Yeah, it is hard. I think I hear, and there's the cultural expectations, and then I also hear a lot of parents saying, like, this is what my culture or my parents or my grandparents are telling me I shouldn't be doing, but I really don't want to do that. But some of them are saying, you know, I'm really excited about this. So I think Danielle and I really don't like to tell people what to do. And I think that so much of what we do is helping people find their own answers and their own solutions and their own way through this, because not only culturally, but just like, there's just a bajillion different choices to make constantly with parenting. I mean, we both work in the hospital system also, and I work in lactation in the hospital system. So I think probably there we see a greater range of differences in cultures and backgrounds. And I always try to approach it with a lot of respect, especially a lot of more traditional cultures do have practices around baby feeding and baby sleeping and all of these things. They have these practices for a reason. A lot of the time I say, you know, if your culture is telling you like you should be eating this food to encourage your milk production, then do it. Like there's no research to show that it's going to be harmful to you. And I think it's beautiful that you participate in that culture. So even if it doesn't say you should eat that in like a Western textbook, then you should still like not be afraid of that practice. And also, like, you have every right to make your own choices about this. Like, I can tell you what I know about it, but that doesn't mean that that's going to be the right choice for you.
Yeah, and additionally, I would add just, you know, as you would expect, maternity services, this kind of fertility, it is not rigorously researched for a lot of reasons. It's not well-funded research. And there has been a history in the a process in our American history of edging out indigenous birth workers, black birth workers. You know, there's a whole history of granny midwives that a lot of people don't even have any awareness of. And so recognizing that what one person might think is right is totally in a vacuum. And, you know, we really have to acknowledge that even, you know, our whiteness and our white culture and the values or the ideas that our parents, who are also white, might have in terms of parenting are never made with the full breadth of awareness, you know? So we have to understand that even, you know, biomedical science, it just doesn't take everyone into consideration. So I think when you run into practitioners who really have one way to do it, that's kind of a red flag for us, because yeah, we just don't have ground to stand on, especially in this line of work, where there's been intentional exclusion of certain voices.
What are some of the challenges that you have faced as wellness-focused entrepreneurs, if I will? You've talked about your trainings as birth workers, but essentially you're also two entrepreneurs as co-operators of a business. That must come with some challenges, apart from having to shut down during phase one and during our pandemic emergency.
Totally. This is Danielle again. Yeah, absolutely. We were joking. We actually are grads of the SpaceWorks incubator here in Tacoma, and we are both idea people, admittedly. You know, we're sort of like, we see a problem, let's try to contribute to a solution, and we get really excited about that. I think there was a moment when we were in that program, we realized like, wow, we could have made this a lot easier for ourselves as entrepreneurs by taking like one thing at a time. But, you know, our business model has never been one thing at a time, because I don't believe that that's what new parents need, you know? And so we wanted to have a model that included retail space, that included collaborative practitioners and partners in the work, and included classes, support groups, yoga and movement. So, you know, we didn't make it easy for ourselves as new business owners to focus and perfect something. And I think that we've learned a ton over the last year and a half about juggling multiple, just like multiple plates, you know? So definitely as entrepreneurs, if we did it again, maybe we'd pick one thing to really master and then get a process around, rather than throwing everything in at once.
our ideas often have been bigger than our implementation abilities. And so just to really learn as we go, what is doable, what is scalable at this point. At the end of the day, we are entrepreneurs. We have a big vision. We have a community need that we're trying to solve. But in addition to all of that, we are also practitioners ourselves, and we also serve families still. So that has been a really tough line to toe.
It's very hard.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you what you like about Tacoma. Emily, would you like to start?
Sure. I love the size of Tacoma. I love the culture here. I love the combination of cultures here. I love that it is a much slower pace than some cities. We moved a few years ago from San Diego to Seattle and then to here. And we really love the pace of Tacoma, especially compared to Seattle. I love that there's a lot of beauty in the city, and then it's close to and includes things like Point Defiance and forests. And when we're not, you know, running around like crazy running this place and wearing 1,000 hats, I think my favorite things to do in Tacoma involve food and running around in the forest with my kids. And it just has like this really amazing community aspect that I always dreamed of living in a city where I could walk to my favorite coffee shop and just run into my friends there and feel like it's home. And this city really does feel like home for us, and we're really grateful for it.
I love it. What about you, Danielle?
Yeah, so Tacoma, first thing on the top is I think Tacoma does a really great job at acknowledging and sort of letting everyone's weirdness flourish. I am from Chicago, and in the Midwest, we really try to downplay things that are not, being unique is like questionably a liability in the Midwest. And so living in Tacoma was the first time that I really felt like, wow, I can like be all of the sides of myself. And, you know, that includes my queer identity, which has been something that I have just had a lot of back and forth and sort of inner turmoil about. And the fact that I can meet people and talk about it, and, you know, they have similar experiences. I am married to a man, and so there's also some added stuff there around my own identity. And I felt like moving to Tacoma, I really did find a community that could hold that space. So yeah, so that's a big part of it. There is an extraordinary amount of mixed race families, Black and otherwise. So my children are multiracial, and that has been, you know, a great added advantage to be able to find other families that look like ours, that are thinking about similar things, that are dealing with similar issues. So Tacoma, what I love about it is there seems to be a place for everybody. And Tacoma is not scared of your weirdness.
Well, I have definitely enjoyed digging into a little bit of the weirdness, which doesn't seem too weird to me this evening. But as we wrap up, where can our listeners learn more about Fern and Foster?
You can go to our website, which is just fernandfoster.com, or our Instagram handle is Fern and Foster Tacoma, or on Facebook, too.
Mm-hmm. And signing up for our newsletter, we do not send them very frequently, but we try to get around to it periodically, just so you know what's happening, what we're thinking about.
Cool. Well, thank you both so much for our conversation today.
We just love this community, and thanks for letting us be a part of it.
Danielle Schell and Emily Ager are co-owners and operators of Fern and Foster, a place focused on supporting families and individuals throughout their fertility journeys. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Dialing 311 will get you to the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line. Dialing 211 will get you to statewide community resources. Our email address is daily@ktqa.org, and our phone number is 253-330-8821. You can call us or text us there. I'm Becky, and you've been listening to KTQA Daily Briefing.
KTQA LP 95.3 Tacoma.